Do you hear that funny noise? It's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that was great before electricity. After taking 5 years of French, all he's able to do is irritate Frenchies, Medicare expert, Doug Jones.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. We're sneaking up on 250 episodes, over 20,000 downloads, and we couldn't be happier to have you joining us for another episode. Thrill-packed, exciting, I don't know. It's Medicare. How thrill-packed or exciting could it be? But anyway, we're glad to have you here listening to whatever we come up with to say. When I say we, I'm talking about me. I'm talking about Drew McMillan, my Canadian nephew, who did the intro for us. And eventually I'll be talking about Randy Carson, who tells me everything that's going on the other side of the screen. He slides the slides, he twists the knobs, he pushes the buttons. And one thing he does without a doubt that he's the best one in the business at doing this is playing our 30-second radio spot. And this is the time of the show when I usually ask him to play it because it is a shortened version of the explanation as to what we're doing here. So if you listen carefully to this radio spot, you won't need to have a big, long explanation from me as to why we're doing this podcast. So Randy, take it away.
Medicare is complicated. Medicare can be confusing. Medicare is no fun to study. Will you know what decisions to make when Medicare time arrives for you? My name is Doug Jones, and I wrote a book to help you figure it all out. Medicare for the Lazy Man. It's on sale at Amazon and BarnesandNoble.com. Also, you can download and listen to my podcast, Medicare for the Lazy Man, wherever fine podcasts are given away free of charge. Medicare for the Lazy Man, simplest and easiest guide ever.
All righty. There you go. That's why we're here. And if you have an interest in figuring out what to do about Medicare, I'm your guy. I will be happy to assist you in any way that is necessary for you to feel comfortable that your transition into Medicare is going to be satisfactory and suitable for you. So since I don't like to bore people with the Medicare talk too much, I do occasionally reach for other types of topics. Now, I have a close friend who is a former high school classmate of mine who sent out an attachment to an email, and she said, check this out. And so I did. I think her husband's a medical doctor. I'm just not sure. He was a year ahead of us, and a year or two ahead of us, and I never really got to know him that well. But basically, she is on the mailing list, or he is on the mailing list, for the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Here's another government department that doesn't know how to create a properly spelled acronym. CDC stands for Centers for Disease Control. But then a few years later, or maybe many years later, they decided to add and prevention because the name of their department wasn't long enough. But they didn't change the acronym. Should be CDCP, but they didn't do that. So they're just like CMS. CMS stands for Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, but it's spelled CMS. They forgot one of the M's. So anyway, I'm always curious to know what the Centers for Disease Control are up to because they're the people that insist that we have to wear masks and close businesses and not engage in any social discourse, even though it's commonly known that young people don't get debilitating response from the coronavirus or the Wuhan flu or whatever, and that older people are the ones who are most likely to be at risk for serious complications. So they say everybody has to quarantine themselves and everybody has to wash their hands all the time and all this stuff. And so I'm always wondering what they're up to on a daily basis as they're spending our tax money. So she sent this very, very large file. And I thought maybe I could turn it into a little give and take with Randy, because there are several sections to this, and we could do one section in each of the next few podcast episodes, since my my jokes about Chuck Norris fell flat. None of those apparently were funny enough. I could see that Randy was very bored every time I trotted out my list of Chuck Norris jokes. So I'm going to try this. These are CDC preferred terms for select population groups and communities. So I'm going to say that again. This is the CDC's official list of preferred terms for select population groups and communities. So I'm going to start with the one that is corrections and detentions. It has the language in communication. Oh, it says here, language and communication products should reflect and speak to the needs of people in the audience of focus. The following provide some preferred terms for select population groups. The terms to try to use represent an ongoing shift toward non-stigmatizing language. So, Randy, I'm going to want you to help me out here. In this first section that the CDC has hired people to change the English language for, we're dealing with people who are involved in corrections and detentions. Now, here are the words they don't want us to use. They don't want us to use inmate. They don't want us to use prisoner. They don't want us to use convict or ex-convict. They don't want us to use offender. They don't want us to use criminal. They don't want us to use the word parolee. They don't want us to use the word detainee. However, now, how am I going to get you involved in this, Randy? I'm not sure without showing you how I could get this to be a guessing game.
Well, I can guess. How about, I've got one that came to mind.
Okay, lay it on.
How about an unwilling permanent guest?
Well, there you go. That could be, and that's as long almost as most of these substitutions. Notice these
So what did they come up with?
Well, here's the longest one of the list replacements for those that I just read off. I read all those words off to you, and they said, don't use any of those. Try these words. Okay, people / persons who are incarcerated or detained, and that's their response for prisoner or inmate. And then it's in parentheses, it says often used for shorter jail stays or youth in detention facilities. So you wouldn't use people or persons who are incarcerated or detained to mean long-term, you know, lifers or whatever. So, but it's nice of them to give us something we can use that denotes the shorter jail stays or youth in detention facilities. Here's another one. Partner / child of an incarcerated person. Now we got to say that instead of, I don't know what, it's this whole list of words, they said, don't use these. Try using partner / child of an incarcerated person. So right away, it makes no sense whatsoever. But that's okay. These are the people that are busy making up rules to mask everybody up.
I have a question.
Yes, sir.
May I ask a question?
Oh, please do.
Okay. Why do we care if this is a partner and or child of an incarcerated person? Aren't we still innocent until proven guilty in this country?
Well, that's the theory. That's the legal theory that we operate under. But I've just gone through two of their suggested replacements. I haven't even broken halfway yet. Let's go with another one here. Persons in pretrial or with charge. What are you supposed to do? Somebody made up this list of replacement phrases and they don't even match the words they don't want us to use.
So who dreamt this crap? Oh, excuse me. Did I say crap?
You who did. Dreamt this if you were leaving that in an Amazon review of my book, they won't fly. No, it sure won't. It breaks at least two of Amazon's rules, and they won't let you leave that positive review.
Did I hurt your feelings, Doug?
Oh, no, but you're headed that direction. So. People who were formerly incarcerated. You're supposed to use
Oh, my God. Oh, come on.
Persons on parole or probation, non-U.S. citizens or immigrants in immigration detention facilities, people in immigration detention facilities. What the hell? Nothing in the first list of words they don't want you to use indicated anything about immigration, but yet they managed to sneak that in there.
I got one for you that they didn't cover on the list. We should have covered it.
Tell me what that is.
We should have covered it. This is an individual who is a spouse and or child of a person who claims to have seen a UFO.
My God, you were taking notes.
I was.
That should have been added to the list. I may actually fire off a strongly worded letter to the CDC telling them that while they were caring for our health and protecting us from disease and preventing and controlling disease, they missed a term that could have been added to their list of stupidity. So
well, how about all the people that are landing on UFOs? Do they have to wear masks?
I don't know. That's a good question. I don't think the UFO people are telling us much detail. I just realized this whole thing, this is 8 pages long. We're gonna be able to talk about this every podcast episode for about a year. But then I just saw that at the very top under the table of contents, it has some links. So I should go back to the computer and print up the other things. They have inclusive communication principles that we can learn. They have using a health equity lens. Anytime I see the word equity, I know where that came from. They have key principles. They have developing inclusive communications and resources and references. So I don't know. I'm pretty excited about this because I always wondered what the CDC did with their massive federal budget. And now I understand that they're hiring linguists to tell us how to speak. I should try one more section here. Let's see what happens. This section involves disability. Now, here are the words that they don't want us to use. Disabled. Differently able. Never used that one in my life. Wouldn't even consider using differently able, but they're telling me not to use it. Afflicted. Handicapped. We're not supposed to say handicapped. I thought handicapped people have been telling us for years to use handicapped. Another they don't want us to use is confined to a wheelchair or wheelchair bound. Now, instead of those, we're supposed to say people with disabilities or people with a disability. That's already longer than any of those things I think that I just read that we're not supposed to use. People who are deaf or hard of hearing or who are blind or have low vision. People with an intellectual or development disability. People who use a wheelchair or mobility device. You know something, those are not, they say don't use these words, instead try the new words or phrases. There's no correlation there. So I got to tell you, the morons that are writing this stuff on our paycheck, by the way, are not even able to put together a good comprehensive list of don't use this, use this instead, but they don't match up. So I'm very confused. They have notes attached to this section. Avoid using vulnerable when describing people with disabilities. You're not supposed to use the term vulnerable. I don't know why, you know, that would ever come up. Also, another note, the CDC is aware that some individuals with disabilities prefer to use identity first terminology, which means a disability or disability status is referred to first. For the purposes of these guidelines, CDC promotes person first language. So I guess they're saying that people like to say I'm a crippled weirdo. Maybe I'm a crippled space alien. But the under CDC rules, they're going to say that it's a space alien who is crippled. Or, you know, maybe that's on the list of things not to say. So
I got one for you.
Lay it on me.
I just want to make sure I got this right. You mentioned the disability first, and then you go on into the rest of it.
No, the CDC says they know that some crippled people want you to talk about their disability first, but they're not going to do that.
Oh, well, how about dumber than a brick CDC writer?
Well, oh, let's see.
Does that work? Does that work?
That's actually several disabilities. You got to be dumb as a box of rocks to even work for this joint in the first place. And then to be writing for them. Oh, my God. Yeah, I think you
can. Well, you know, to be a writer for the CDC, apparently you only need a third grade education.
I think you're the kind of writer that nobody else is ever going to want you to write anything for. So that would be the typical writer the CDC would hire. Anyway, I think we'll come back to this on other episodes because it's indicative of how effective the CDC is in saving us all from the global panic that is causing us to have to wear face diapers and stay home and not buy stuff at local stores. So,
well, keep that close on your desk, Doug, because that is going to be grist for the grist mill for quite a while.
Boy. Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, I just reached into the MLM mailbag. That is at dbj@mlmmailbag.com. And I pulled out a piece that I think bears a little bit of attention because it's a darn good question. And it doesn't come up often. And this guy, Heath, who wrote this question to me, I think has been giving some serious thought to this. So I wanted to really treat it seriously because unlike the CDC, this is not a joke. So Heath wrote, "Hello, Doug. I have enjoyed listening to your podcast. I have learned so much about Medicare from it. I have recently entered into Medicare Supplement and Medicare Advantage sales." Oops. I should have waited for Randy to finish his coffee before he just did a spit take over.
I damn near choked on that.
You might want to wipe your screen off, Randy. There's coffee dripping down your screen.
Did I hear the bad word?
You did hear the bad word, but there's good coming after the bad.
Okay, well, I'll calm down. Let me wipe my face, and I'm going to hose the screen off. I'll be right back.
All right. Very good. Okay, while you're gone, I'm going to finish reading Keith's question. He says, "I've recently entered into Medicare Supplement and Medicare Advantage sales. When I first obtained my certification for selling Medicare Advantage, remember I've told you about that, I have to spend a good section of every summer taking all of these stupid tests, and every year it's the same material. Now, you would think that I would just remember it from the prior year, but they just switch it up on you a little bit, and that allows you to flunk. And if you flunk too many times, then you cannot help people sell the products that they would like to buy, which is, in my case, it's only drug plans, prescription drug plans, not Medicare Advantage. But once you qualify for one, you qualify for all of them. So I go through the certification process every summer, and that's what he's talking about here. He first got certified, and now he can legally sell Medicare Advantage plans. He said, "I thought they sounded like a fantastic product, but after listening to you and others on YouTube," so I'm not the only one, "my confidence in selling Medicare Advantage plans has greatly reduced. There are many I talk to, though, that have very limited resources, and it seems that Medicare Advantage is really their only option. So here's this question. Is there ever a time when someone should choose a Medicare Advantage plan rather than a supplement? Thank you for your show, Heath."
Okay. May I enter a thought here?
Oh, God. You have a thought?
Yes, I have one.
I love it when you have a thought.
Let's just use the term high value, and then you can take it from there.
Okay. What am I using that term for?
You know, is there ever a time that somebody else could get something besides an Advantage plan who has limited finances? And my answer to that, and I'm sure you will take us there, is the high value.
You know something? I did not take us there, but you're absolutely right, because it's the good alternative for a Medicare Advantage plan that might not cost very much money or might not cost any money. But I didn't take Heath to the high value arena because I'm pretty sure he already knows about that. And we talk about high value, high deductible plans a lot. So I made my answer to his question something different than I might have even thought of originally. So he's asking, is there ever a time when someone should choose a Medicare Advantage plan rather than a supplement? And I said, good to hear from you, Heath. You have probably observed one of the three times I can think of that a Medicare Advantage plan might not be disadvantageous. And of course, I stole that word from Randy. Of course, in certification training, we are not exposed to the negative elements of most Medicare Advantage plans. As you know, the real dollar cost of an insured person that they will likely pay is going to come after they get sick and require medical treatment. The cost-sharing elements of almost all Advantage plans expose the client to much more risk than even the high-deductible, high-value Medicare supplement plans, which are my favorites. So I said another time I might advise enrollment in a Medicare Advantage plan would be if the client was looking at a major debilitating illness or injury requiring lengthy convalescence, no travel, and probably no desire to consult with different specialists outside of their residential area. In other words, they could use a plan that doesn't offer the freedom of choice that I always tout that Medicare supplements specialize in, because they're so far gone that it's practically a lost cause. And I was trying to find a nicer way to sugarcoat that. A third time that I might recommend a Medicare Advantage plan would be to suggest serious consideration of the Medicare MSA concept. Now, for those of you who don't remember or haven't heard about the MSA product, those are Medicare Advantage plans with a huge difference. And I only really tout one company. They operate in about two-thirds of the United States, but they offer a huge deductible, like $5,000 or $8,000 deductible medical plan. And then they give the participant a few thousand dollars towards the expenses that might get charged to them during the course of a year, but they still have a fairly healthy, like $3,000 or $5,000 cost sharing. Now, this is for a person who is really risk averse and healthy and wants to just sock away a bunch of cash and doesn't camp out on the doctor's doorstep, doesn't have debilitating medical problems. This is a great plan for somebody that just wants to actually turn a profit from their health insurance. But let me go back to where I left off with the response to Heath. Third time that I might suggest a Medicare Advantage plan would be to suggest serious consideration of the Medicare MSA concept. I endorse one company's product in my book, and it does address a lot of the shortcomings that traditional Medicare Advantage plans have. It's a great way for risk-tolerant people, confident in their continued good health, to actually profit from their health insurance plans. The one risk I would caution the client about is the fact that if they have a degradation of their health, it might make a Medicare supplement plan unobtainable for them. In other words, if they stay on and don't just drop dead, but if they have a Medicare MSA and they get diagnosed with some lengthy, long-lasting, debilitating, horribly expensive, perhaps ultimately fatal disease, no Medicare supplement plan is going to take them voluntarily, except in a very, very few circumstances. So they could possibly, even though I espouse Medicare MSA as a type of Medicare Advantage plan that people should not hate, they could stay on that plan too long and they would lose the opportunity to get a Medicare supplement because they would not be able to answer the questions, the medical health questions that the supplement company would ask them to respond to. So that would be a drawback of buying a Medicare MSA. So I said, thanks again for writing and thanks for listening, Heath. It was not my best work. I don't think that answer was the best, that I could come up with. But frankly, he asked for situations under which I might recommend a Medicare Advantage. And Medicare MSAs are Medicare Advantage plans. They just allow you all the freedoms that the Medicare supplements allow. You can go to any doctor you want to, and they'll pay. You aren't stuck with their choice of drug plans. You can pick from any of the 30 or so drug plans that might be available in your home county. And it's on and on and on. The Medicare MSA plan will give you a few thousand dollars at the beginning of the year. And if you don't spend anything, if you don't use that money for anything else, you can use it to invest. You can use it to drill oil wells or any number of things that aren't related to Medicare or medical insurance. That's yours to keep. The risk you run is that you've got a high deductible medical plan, and you, if you need some of that cash to pay your deductible because you have a disease or an injury, then you will have frittered it away on the roulette wheel or something maybe. On the other hand, this might be an ideal product for people who are very successful, and it's small potatoes. Taking that risk is small potatoes, but it allows them to make a profit from their health insurance plan. So that's one type of Medicare Advantage plan that I would recommend with caveats. So I probably burned up a couple of episodes worth of time.
Yeah, we're done.
It sounds so final when you say that.
The sand in the hourglass has run out, Doug.
Wasn't that a soap opera at some point?
What was it? The Days of Our Lives, I think.
There you go.
It used to come on and you saw the sand running through the hourglass and all that good stuff. Yeah. Obviously, I'm describing how old I really am. But
let me tell you how scary this was. Well, I was still in college, still an undergrad, and we had a little baby girl. And so what happened was I would go to my college classes in the morning and Mary would go in the afternoon. Then we would swap the next semester. She'd go in the morning. I'd go in the afternoon. And one of us had to stay home with our baby. And so depending on what time of the day I was on duty, I had strict instructions to watch three different soap operas. And so from 1973-ish to 1975-ish, I spent every day watching these things. I think they were a half an hour long back then. It was All My Children, General Hospital, and one other one. I can't remember. So anyway, I had to watch these things. Then she would grill me. She'd come home from her class. All right, what happened? Well, it was so-and-so and so-and-so did. So-and-so was caught, playing grab ass with so-and-so. All right, now, what did they say about this and that? And she knows their whole history, so she's got to ask me questions about their personalities and so forth. Finally, after several years, I graduated from college. We had to move back to Illinois. And so I would go to work, and then I would come home in the evening, and I'd say, okay, what happened on General
Hospital?
I turned into a lady, for Christ's sake.
Oh my God, that hurts.
It took me a couple of years.
A couple of years. Is that how long it took you to work out of that?
I think I started to lose interest after less than a year, but I still politely listened. If she started giving me a report, I would say, oh, yeah, and what did so-and-so say about that? And I thought they didn't like each other. Well, they changed. It was such a waste of time because they would, every episode, half of the episode would consist of, here's what you missed in the last episode. And then the other half of the episode was, here's what you're going to see next time.
Yeah.
And then the actual
episode was about 10 minutes long.
Exactly.
All right. So I've got a question for you, Doug.
Ask away.
Who sells insurance?
Insurance salesmen do, and I am one of those people.
Somebody called Doug Jones sells insurance.
Right. That's right.
And you know why I bring that up?
Why do you bring that up?
Because there's been some confusion that in addition to being a great author, a great speaker, and a great podcaster, that you didn't sell insurance. Well, that is wrong.
It is wrong, but you're saying in a way that makes me blush. So I thank you for the accolades, but frankly, I'm just a humble servant of the people that need some advice. That's what I'm here for. And I'll do their paperwork for them, too.
You're doing a fabulous job. So anyway, let me run this train up to the station by saying thank you all for joining us. As always, we appreciate it. As you might imagine, it's not nearly as much fun without you as it is with you. We're looking forward to seeing you again next time. But in the meantime, you have listened for about 32 and a half minutes to Doug Jones, the anti-insurance insurance guy from Oklahoma, who sells insurance.
I sell insurance. Thank you, Randy.
Bye-bye.